There were people with RPGs in the state video. You know,
but David, some people are suggesting that the governor, and for that matter, the state, the federal government, should investigate rather than just straight away arresting, which will be an infringement on his fundamental human rights. A human rights defender that you are, they said your call is misplaced because there has to be an investigation first.
How can anyone threatening to create something bigger than Boko Haram to terrorize the state of the River State? Someone threatening to a sitting governor, how can it be said to be exercising his fundamental human rights? How do the ingredients of the threats against the sitting governor and against the state, how do they constitute expression of freedom of speech or any other freedoms enshrined in Chapter 4 of our Constitution? In my view, I sincerely do not see it.
But some people said Dokubu Asare seemed to have protection from so-called powers that be, that emboldens him to make those statements that he's making. Some people said all some of the statements that he's been making are just mere bluster, and there's nothing towards it. He's not created any anarchy. He's not attacking anybody. In fact, he has been protecting and helped protect people from being attacked by unknown gunmen and assailants.
That assertion is not true, completely true. Because when you look at it critically, the president is at liberty to meet bad boys at night. The body language of the president should not, or government policy should not support criminality. What the Dokubu Asare are doing, majority of them are the ones who are involved in fire bunkering in the Niger Delta. They are the ones that, majority of his boys are the ones actually kidnapping people in the Niger Delta. So how can, even when he was actively in the creeks, those were his modus operandi. And his modus operandi has not changed. You know, he's currently seeking political patronage with the president. You understand? But that does not give impetus to threaten a sitting governor. Doesn't just make any sense.
Deji Adeyanju is a human rights activist and the convener for Concern Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Results of the recent referendum show a majority of citizens support dropping French as an official language, though it will be used as a working language in the West African country. Reports say about 96.9% of the total vote cast approved the new constitution that removes French as an official language. 13 local languages such as Bambara, Dodo and Bobo will now become official languages. The new document also gives the president broad powers, a move critics say will undermine democracy and encourage dictatorship. For the latest development, I reach Salif Tigana. He is the CEO of Tigana Technology, a tech company based in the capital, Bamako.
The president explained that these ideas was from the National Congress that we had. So from that that Congress, the population have decided to take the national languages like Bambara, Sinufo, Fulani to promote them to national language, official language, and then French to make French a work language.
How would this work if French is a working language and the local languages like Bambara? How is this going to work? Because sometimes some of these local languages are not spoken internationally. So how will this work?
You are right. They are not spoken internationally, and some of them are not even writing. So I think it's going to be hard. But the thing is, so far, we're still working with the French, like at the government level, the documents, and even the national television, everything, the news are in French. And I think it is all about semantic, you know. Okay, just to say French is no more official language, I think it is just about a semantic. But in practical term, I think French will always remain the language that we are going to use in international affairs and also in trading with other nations and communicating with other nations.
But based on the referendum, how are Malians reacting to it, at least for the people that you have spoken with? What are they telling you about the results of the referendum?
Well, there is two parts of people that one side it is that were opposed to referendum, that includes some of the political parties and associations. And also some religious leaders, they have called to to vote against the constitution, and then you have a majority that express they're willing to vote for yes for the constitution, and then right after the results comes out, and then we have not heard from the opposition.
Some people are also suggesting that the referendum as passed gives interim president, a military ruler, ruling for a very, very long time. How do you respond to this?
Well, I think if you look at the new constitution, it's obvious that the power of the president has increased. And but also there are some counterbalances. I think the president can be impeached by the parliament, which is not quite obvious that that can happen. But I think there are many other parts that are very positive in that constitution. For example, if you are elected with the one party, you cannot switch the party in during your mandate. Those are very positive. And also, if you come to in terms of fighting against the corruption and then injustice, all those things are the positive things on it. But yes, the present power has increased. Now we are going to wait and see if Asimi Goita is gonna run or not. For now, so far he did not indicate that he's going to run for president.
But overall, are Malians satisfied with the referendum that they had? Because some people are suggesting that the figures that were announced, that over 90% of the people voted positively for the constitution, was just manipulation.
I don't think that is quite a right statement, but I think a lot of people voted for different reasons. For example, myself, I voted for the constitution for one point, the secular. It says Mali is going to remain a secular state. So if we had changed, or if the constitution, if the vote yes have failed, what is going to happen? I think no politician, no Malian politician in the future will put secularity into the constitution file anymore. I mean, everybody would be afraid to put it there, because they would think that if you put it there, the imams and then religious people will call against it, and you are going to lose the election.
Salif Tigana is the CEO of Tigana Technology, a tech company based in Mali. He spoke with me from the Malian capital, Bamako. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent, but first, in Uganda, the leader of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, says demands by a section of the party for his resignation are unjustified and unfair. Patrick Oboye Amuriat also says the party is suffering from what he says is the failure of some members to recognize his leadership. His remarks come after the party launched an investigation into allegations that Amuriat and the Secretary General of the FDC, Nandala Mafabi, allegedly received some funds from Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, a charge both men deny. Meanwhile, some supporters of the party say if tensions within the FDC and its alleged rift are not adequately resolved, the group could fall apart. But Patrick Oboye Amuriat tells me that members will continue to operate within party structures to find solutions to the challenges.
What is happening today in the FDC is that we are trying to address an allegation where our founding father, Colonel retired Dr. Kizza Besigye, who is known to many in this country, made an allegation that he had intelligence information that money was received from the ruling NRM government to facilitate my and other candidates' campaign, the election of 2021. And so when this came to the public domain, it became necessary for us to examine ourselves. And of course, you know, in this country, receiving money directly from Mr. Museveni while being in the opposition is really supposed to be a taboo, something that people take so seriously, and, you know, it could cause the lack of confidence in individual political players who may have been mentioned in this kind of scam. And so this is really the situation that the FDC faces today, where names of key players within the FDC, the top leadership of the FDC, including myself, have been mentioned as having received with the intent to sell or get compromised by the Museveni money.
I understand now the party appears to be divided. Are we going to see a split in the FDC? Because remember, the FDC has a record. At least General Muntu, who was then the president of the party, left with some people. Now, we are seeing two centers of power within the FDC. People are expressing concern that there could be a split within the FDC. Is this a real possibility, and how are you addressing this?
Well, a split is something that we would really want to avoid at this moment in time. Of course, given what you have just observed about the departure of one of our key players, former president and former secretary general, who left the party on an account of an election that they felt they had been unfairly treated in. This, however, is a matter that the truth will be able to either exonerate or it may make certain players within the organization culpable. This is really, I think, a different cup of tea that we're dealing with.
Patrick, the elephant in the room is the allegation that you received approximately or more than $5 million and that you and Mafabi failed to account to the party of the funds allegedly received from the NRM. My question to you is, did you receive any money and refused to account for them?
First of all, the actually bigger elephant in the room is the different versions of this money, because some people have said we received 5 million, some people have claimed we received 50 million, the other ones say no, think that is no, it's 2.5 million. You know, it depends on who is actually speaking. These are really wild allegations. The fact of the matter is that this kind of money or any money was not received directly or indirectly by any official of the party, whether it be it me or the Secretary General of the party. And this really, I think, just plays for propaganda purposes.
Some people are suggesting that perhaps it's time for you to step down based on some of these allegations. Do you think those who are calling for your resignation are justified?
I think that they are not only just not justified, but also unfair to the holders of the office of the Secretary General and the President, because really today what we dealing with is an allegation. And I think that what the committee of the elders was concentrated on is the evidence that needed to be brought forward. Now, I think that whether or not we should step down for further investigations depends on whether enough evidence has been adduced to find us culpable to the act for which we have been accused.
Patrick Oboy Amuriat is the leader of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Teachers Union of Malawi plans to meet Education Minister Madelito Kambawa Wurima and other stakeholders to help employ more qualified teachers for public schools. The group that represents teachers in the Southern African country says it's committed to deploying more across the country as part of the effort to boost education. The group that represents teachers in the Southern African country says it's committed to deploying more teachers across the country as part of the effort to boost education. This after more than 3,000 applicants showed up for an interview that has only 60 positions open at a school in Intero in Malawi's central region. Industry analysts say it appears the government does not have the resources to employ significant numbers of the trained teachers. Charles Kumchenga is the General Secretary of the Teachers Union of Malawi. He tells me that the administration must find ways of employing more capable instructors to improve education.
Thank you very much. As Teachers Union of Malawi, we are a little concerned on that because we were expecting all qualified teachers to be absorbed in the system. Looking at the number of teachers who are in different schools, so as the Teachers Union of Malawi, we are deeply concerned on that one.
Charles, have you been able to meet the authorities like the Minister of Education and other public officials to try to resolve this major concern?
Yes, we met last time. I think it was last week when we met the Minister of Education on the same issues. And we are also planning to meet again after next week, when the minister will be available and the other government officials. And we believe it will be at least a fruitful meeting, taking into account of the issue we raised last time. And the government gave us a nod on that one, just to show that it is also eager to absorb all the teachers.
Well, Charles, some people are saying that perhaps the government does not have the needed resources in order to absorb all these qualified teachers. What is your reaction to this?
Yes, definitely. In one way or the other, the government might say it doesn't have resources to absorb all the teachers. And we know for sure in Malawi, we have also private schools where other teachers will also be absorbed. So we are sure that some of these teachers will be absorbed by the private sector, that is the private schools in the country. But all in all, we are looking for the absorption by the government itself. So it might be not all the teachers, because when we are talking of all teachers, remember that they were trained in cohorts or in phases. So we have cohort 30. Which has been absorbed, then we have cohort 14, 15, and 16. Not all of them can be absorbed at once, but I think little by little they'll be absorbed.
Some members of the Malawi Teachers Union are seeking permission to go and seek greener pastures abroad, and they are calling on the government to make it easier for them to go to other African countries and perhaps outside the shores of Africa to see greener pastures abroad. Some are saying this could negatively impact the education system in Malawi. What are your thoughts?
Yes, obviously it is even affecting the education in Malawi negatively on that one, just because if teachers are not enough in schools, and one teacher is having a lot of learners in his or her classroom, then that teacher will not be able to handle all the learners or the children at a given time. So because of that, I think it is quite difficult for the country to say we are having quality education. So in short, quality education is compromised in one way or the other. So in a true sense, we can say what is required is that the government must fight hard and must make sure that the all teachers are absorbed, although we know for sure that that cannot happen at once. So as teachers in Malawi, we cannot just remain silent on that issue. We are still knocking on the door of the government so that those teachers have to be absorbed.
Would you say that the Teachers Union of Malawi has done enough
Oh, that's what we are doing at the meantime. That's what we are doing, because even before the recruitment of these teachers, it was the Teachers Union of Malawi that fought hard for those teachers to be recruited. And this is not the first time Teachers Union of Malawi had been fighting for the teachers. And we'll keep on fighting, and we'll keep on knocking on their doors so that at least those teachers are absorbed. To us, as a union, we feel it is not proper to train teachers and just dump them somewhere in the system, or just leave them at in their respective homes. Yet we are lacking qualified teachers in the country. So I think that one cannot solve the problem in our schools.
Charles Kumchenga is the General Secretary of the Teachers Union of Malawi. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. It's now time for music from African Collection. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C.
We want to know you for a couple minutes. Don't make all of my gold, they see me finish. Tell if you won't give me 1 minute, cause I convinced you I am that confident. 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 Don't make all of my gold, they see me finish. I convinced you I am that confident. Something on my mind to make I tell you one time. That's some liquor and wine in my head and my girl. Tell me if you like. Say maybe we'll step outside. We can go ride outside in the night sky. In what you feel, in what you go. We can give you up those times. But you know something. You can treat you like when I'm missing. Got nothing.
Why you so shy? Don't go, baby, don't leave me tonight. Ain't nobody
And we hope you enjoyed it.
Tell your friends about VOA Africa. Music, sport, and news.
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Michael Hogby, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, not everyone who close their eyes are asleep, and not all eyes that are wide open can see either. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.